It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. Here we go. Week number 9 in the National Football League on the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast. And if you're looking for a place to make your online wagers, go to betonline.ag, use the promo code podcast1, you get a 50% sign-up bonus today. Betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. He, of course, is our expert, Evan Silva from RotoWorld, at Evan Silva on Twitter. I'm Ross Tucker, the former NFL offensive lineman, at Ross Tucker NFL, Twitter and Instagram. Facebook is Facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. By the way, two things before I forget. Number one, we got gear for you for the first time. I got a sticker on my laptop. I got a Ross Tucker Football Podcast logo sticker on my laptop, which is awesome. The only issue is, you know, when I go to airports now, it's going to be the paparazzi, all the fans. It'll be tough, but I'll be able to fight through it, I think. And we also are giving away another Madden code or hard copy this week. Just rate and review the 5 shows we have for you over at RossTucker.com and send it to me, Ross@RossTucker.com. Screenshots, you're eligible to win the free Madden this week. Speaking of free, Evan, let's get to the Niners and the Raiders. I don't know why I said speaking of free, other than the game is not on pay TV, I guess. Raiders, Niners, what do you got?
I mean, are we going to get Nick Mullins? We might get Nick Mullins starting for the 49ers in this game. It's kind of a difficult game to talk about because we have so many questions, especially on San Francisco's side. Matt Breida will, of course, gut it out again, I'm sure. Playing on a high ankle sprain that he has already aggravated. Raheem Mostert was not seen from last week. Barely seen from. I think he must have suffered an ankle injury because he popped up on the injury report this week with an ankle injury. It's just, you know, it's a really good matchup for the 49ers backfield, but they may be playing with a second-year undrafted free agent in Nick Mullins, who has never set foot in an NFL regular season game. Nick Mullins he did have pretty good numbers his final 2 seasons at Southern Miss, but I mean, he's a really small dude, 6'1", or not smaller than, shorter than 6'1", and 214. You know, not a great athlete, ran 4.9 coming out. He's like a little scrapper, maybe like a poor man's Colt McCoy, I think would be a good way to describe him. But this offense could be a train wreck. I still think that the Raiders defense is not good enough to be a streamer. I mean, they don't get sacks. You know, they don't put any pressure on the quarterback whatsoever. Pro Football Focus has charted them with 54 quarterback pressures this season. That's 31st in the NFL. That's 32nd in the NFL, and 31st in the NFL is the Lions with 100. So the Raiders are just incredibly inept in terms of pass rush. On the other side, but I think you still got to start George Kittle. He should still get targets. He's got a great matchup. The Raiders have just been awful at safety. I mean, we saw Jack Doyle, Eric Ebron, Mo Alie-Cox all got in the end zone last week against the Raiders. Marquise Goodwin is going to be really difficult to trust, even in a great matchup. You know, can Nick Mullins get the ball to him downfield? We don't know. On the Raiders side, Derek Carr played his best game of the season, I thought. Last week, he completed 17 passes at one point, took 0 sacks, only got hit once against the Colts. Just looked a lot more comfortable, looked confident, decisive. The Raiders offensive line got healthy during its week 7 bye, and now they're getting back Kelechi Osemele, their stud left guard, this week. after, and he's been out since week four. So that bodes well for Derek Carr. I do think that Derek Carr is in play as a streamer. Doug Martin looked pretty good in his first game as the Raiders feature back. 89 total yards, got stuffed at the goal line repeatedly and lost a fumble late in the game. But I thought that the way that he ran, he looked pretty good. Got a couple of targets, too. So I think that he is a decent RB2 slash flex. Jalen Richard, because the Raiders fell behind in the game, he wound up playing a lot. He actually led the team in targets, and he was productive in PPR. It would be embarrassing if the Raiders fell behind the Nick Mullins quarterbacked 49ers. So I don't think that Jalen Richard is as good of a play this week, but he is in the mix as a flex option in PPR. In the receiver core, Martavis Bryant got benched coming out of the bye. He played seven snaps, and he was not targeted. And Brandon LaFell, Jordy Nelson, Seth Roberts was the Raiders' three-receiver set. Brandon LaFell did catch a touchdown. Jordy Nelson had 14 yards on five targets. And Seth Roberts caught a 31-yard touchdown in the second quarter. I think that none of these guys are really exciting plays. I think I like Seth Roberts the best, though. The 49ers have been poor against slot receivers. He primarily plays in the slot. Larry Fitzgerald had his season best game as a slot receiver in against the 49ers last week. But Jared Cook is the best option in the passing game. He came out of the bye with a huge week, and the 49ers have just lost like every safety known to man. Adrian Colbert on injured reserve last week. Antone Exum suffered a concussion. He has been ruled out. And Jacquiski Tartt, who is their designated tight end stopper, aggravated a shoulder injury. He's listed as doubtful, not going to play. That takes care of that game.
All right. Now, you already talked about the Niners. I still think Beathard plays. And I agree with you, by the way. I thought Doug Martin did show some nice burst, and the fumble was just an incredible play by Darius Leonard, who, by the way, is an incredible player. I mean, that kid's awesome. Let's get to the Ravens defense that got carved up by Cam and the boys against the Steelers.
Yeah, I think that they bounce back. I think that this team bounces back getting rolled against Carolina, but now coming back home. That's kind of what the Ravens do. And I think that their defense is actually a good fantasy play this week. Ben is just not the same during 1 p.m. Eastern time road games. He's actually fine in later road games and in primetime games. But for whatever reason, this is where he tends to struggle. We saw him have an okay, not great game against Cincinnati. In a spot like this on the road at 1 p.m. Eastern time earlier in the season. He drops down to like a fringe quarterback one, and I think I'm actually going to play the Ravens defense in daily fantasy this week. They're priced too low. They can still get a lot of sacks. They still have a lot of talent on defense. Like ball bounces didn't go their way last week. Like Christian McCaffrey catches that deflected pass. Eric Whittle gets his hands on it, and Christian McCaffrey just dives and catches it. It wasn't the week for the Ravens. And that Panthers offense deserves a lot of credit too. I mean, they're really, really good, especially on the offensive line. We'll talk about them. They're gonna smash against the Buccaneers. But Joe Flacco, I think that he is a low-end, lower-upside streamer, but I do think that he is in the mix as a streamer against this Steelers defense, which has played better recently, but really hasn't been tested by great offenses, though. In the receiver core, the Steelers have been shadowing with Joe Hayden recently, but I don't know that he necessarily is going to chase someone in this game. There have been times that opposing corners have chased Michael Crabtree. At other times, opposing corners have chased John Brown. So I'm not going to pretend to know if Joe Haden is going to shadow someone. But John Brown lit up the Steelers earlier in the season, and he is going to continue to get a lot of opportunities to make plays down the football field, even though he's been up and down. You know, he's a little bit like DeSean Jackson, but he gets more opportunity, gets more targets in an offense that ranks top three in the NFL in pass attempts per game and doesn't have nearly as much target competition as a guy like DeSean Jackson does in Tampa Bay. So to me, John Brown is an every week fantasy starter. Michael Crabtree, more of a low upside guy. He's played 8 games this season. He's only cleared 60 yards in one of them. So he's like a touchdown or bust play against Pittsburgh. Hayden Hurst caught a touchdown last week, but it was delivered by Lamar Jackson in garbage time. The tight end situation is just still, you know, not it's fine for them in real life. It's not something that you want to invest in fantasy. Willie Snead, he's got a decent little matchup in the slot against the Steelers, and he is like an okay wide receiver 4 in PPR. In the backfield, the Ravens traded for Ty Montgomery. That's not good news for Buck Allen. I think that Alex Collins is going to be fine. He's their feature back. You know, he's their grounded pound guy. But Buck Allen, ever since he fumbled in week 5, they have cut way back on his touches. I mean, he's got 6 or fewer touches in every game since then. And I think that Ty Montgomery can right away start taking snaps from him. Ty Montgomery, of course, you know, lost the game-costing fumble last week. Or, you know, he prevented the Packers from having a chance to come back. But he's good in pass protection, and he's a good receiver. He, of course, played receiver at Stanford. So that's going to hurt Buck Allen, I think, you know, potentially immediately. I think you just lower expectations for the Steelers' offense. James Conner, I think, is still an RB1, but a mid-range to lower-end RB1, whereas last week he was an elite RB1. Antonio Brown, you know, we're never going to sit him, but I think that we can't really have, you know, the expectation that, hey, he's going to go for, you know, 150 and a touchdown, or he's going to go for 95 and 2 touchdowns. You know, I don't think that is likely in this spot. The Ravens have done a pretty good job historically of defending him, although Jimmy Smith has struggled. He has not been the same since he came off of suspension and coming back from a series of foot injuries as well. Juju Smith-Schuster in the slot, pretty good matchup against Baltimore, and I think that he is a good buy low. Nicole Cohen, who writes for Pro Football Focus at times, she wrote an article on RotoWorld talking about Juju Smith-Schuster as a good guy to buy, and I agree with that. Among the league leaders in red zone targets, the buy, you know, the Steelers' buy is out of the way. So I agree with that. Vance McDonald, you know, the Ravens, if they've struggled against a position in particular this year, it has been tight ends. So I like Vance McDonald to bounce back from a slow week. And that takes care. Oh, James Washington was a healthy scratch last week. Just wanted to note that. Ryan Switzer will start to get more slot snaps. Not, you know, maybe a guy to keep in mind in case something happens to Juju down the road. But we can move on to the next one.
Next game, it's the Bears and the Bills, who it looks like will be starting Nathan Peterman at quarterback. Unless, I suppose, Terrell Pryor has a good week of practice, and maybe they'll switch him over to quarterback before the game since they just signed him to play receiver, I guess.
Yeah. I think that you want to use the Bears' defense, and you literally don't want to use anybody in the Bills' passing game. I know that you were forced to start, you know, in our 16-teamer. You were forced to start Kelvin Benjamin last week. Very fortunate that he caught that one ball. Got you some points. So, and I think it's going to be a rough go for him again. And, you know, adding Terrell Pryor to the offense is not going to help him either. I mean, Terrell Pryor might step in and be a better receiver than Kelvin Benjamin right away. He's not been very good this year. And I liked him better with Derek Anderson, with whom he had that Carolina connection. He went over 70 yards in Derek Anderson's first start. But as you mentioned, Nathan five-pick Peterman is going to be getting the start against the Bears. On Chicago's side, Allen Robinson missed last week with a groin injury. Just don't know if he's going to be back. You know, he didn't look right the game before. I'm not too optimistic about him right now. Even if he does play, he's probably going to be at less than 100% probably going to be covered by Tre'Davious White. And then if he doesn't play, then Taylor Gabriel probably gets covered by Tre'Davious White. The Bills' defense has been good. You know, the Bills' defense was not the reason that they lost against the Patriots on Monday Night Football. And they have done a consistently good job of limiting scoring. Their pass rush has been good. Jerry Hughes is just a guy that shows up every single week. So I don't think it's going to be easy sledding by any means for this Bears offense. Mitchell Trubisky has been a quarterback one in four straight games. But I'm really lowering expectations for him here, and you know, I would start Ryan Fitzpatrick over him this week for sure. Trey Burton, I think, is, you know, just a lower end tight end one this week. I do think that it could show up as more of a Jordan Howard game, because I think the Bills are really going to struggle scoring. So that is going to allow the Bears to play a little bit more balanced and give the ball to Jordan Howard. The Bills are probably not going to have Tremaine Edmonds, their young stud middle linebacker, who suffered a concussion on Monday night. It's going to probably be hard for him to make it back on a short week. And that would sort of improve the matchup for Jordan Howard. I think that Jordan Howard is still a touchdown dependent guy, but I do think that this is a game where he could get a lot of work. We saw James White as the pass catching specialist really, really tear into the Bills last week. And I think that, you know, provides a little bit of a template for our expectations for Tarik Cohen, who's a dynamic playmaker, man. And, you know, he's a guy that you pretty much want in your fantasy lineup. In your starting lineup every single week. And we can move on to the next one.
Let's get to the Bucks, who are going with Fitzmagic against the Carolina Panthers. Cam's having a great year. The Bucks did not trade DeSean Jackson because Jason Light and Dirk Cutter are throwing a Hail Mary over the second half of the year. It's a Fitzpatrick Hail Mary over the second half of the year here in Tampa to try to save their jobs.
Yeah, I love this game from a daily fantasy and season-long standpoint. It's the third highest total game on the slate. I think that, you know, it's just a perfect spot for Cam Newton, for Greg Olsen, for Christian McCaffrey, for Devin Funchess. I think that Devin Funchess is underpriced on daily fantasy sites. If no Torrey Smith, I think DJ Moore is locked in as a fantasy starter. DJ Moore led the Panthers in targets last week. He had over 100 total yards. He had 72 yards last week. You know, just showing that he can legit dominate a drive. And he's a really, really young player. I mean, he came out sort of abnormally young for a rookie. Only had the one big year at Maryland, but man, he's an explosive playmaker. And but I think that if Torrey Smith misses the game, that increases our confidence level in DJ Moore. If Torrey Smith plays, and Torrey Smith missed last week with a knee injury, then DJ Moore becomes a lot more risky, even in a great matchup. On the other side, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, this Buccaneers team has just been incredibly productive, man. I mean, And I just, like, if you just lump together Jameis Winston and Ryan Fitzpatrick's total fantasy points scored on the season, and this includes all the interceptions, they have combined to score more fantasy points per game than Patrick Mahomes, who is the number one overall fantasy quarterback. And I think that, you know, a lot of that is attributable to the quality of their weapons. I mean, they have great, great weapons. You know, they have been healthy for the most part on the offensive line. You know, those things are very good. But I think also to the offensive system under Todd Monken, who I think might get some head coaching interest after the year. Maybe even if the Bucs do fire Dirk Cotter, you know, maybe they should look at keeping Todd Monken as their head coach. But I think that I believe in the system, and I think that Ryan Fitzpatrick executes the system better than Jameis Winston does. And in a shootout game like this, man, Ryan Fitzpatrick has serious, serious upside. He's been a top six fantasy quarterback in all three games that he played start to finish. He played less than a half last week, and he was the quarterback 15 on the week. So I think he's a lock and load in fantasy football. No Ronald Jones. He's going to miss multiple weeks. That raises the outlook for Peyton Barber, who had 19 carries last week, zero targets. I mean, he truly is a zero in the passing game. But, you know, the Panthers have not been particularly good against the run. So it's a decent matchup. Peyton Barber, kind of a touchdown-dependent guy, but he's playable as like an RB2 slash flex. When he was after the Bucks fell behind, you know, he was like absent from the game last week, and that's your biggest concern. It was all Jacquizz Rodgers, and Jacquizz Rodgers wound up catching four passes. Mike Evans, lock and load against Carolina. He has incredible numbers with Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, even dating back to last season. They hooked up on a 72-yard touchdown bomb last week, in addition to another 27-yard catch. DeSean Jackson has been about the same with Jameis and with Ryan Fitzpatrick. And, you know, it's not necessarily a chemistry thing. And if we were going to pick a quarterback with whom he has better chemistry, I think I would lean in Ryan Fitzpatrick's direction anyway. But with DeSean Jackson, it's really that he just doesn't get a lot of targets. So when he, you know, the targets that he does get, like, he has to capitalize on them. And if he doesn't capitalize on them, then he's going to hurt you. The Panthers have been getting crushed by tight ends. This is actually a battle between teams that have allowed the most fantasy points, the Panthers, and the second most fantasy points, the Buccaneers, to opposing tight ends, which, again, you know, that makes Greg Olsen a very confident start. Also, O.J. Howard, a very confident start. O.J. Howard has been tremendous with Ryan Fitzpatrick, and last week scored the touchdown that set up the Buccaneers to take that game into overtime after Ryan Fitzpatrick entered down, I can't remember what it was, but like 34-16. I mean, it was by a lot of points. O.J. Howard, top six fantasy tight end play. Can't use Cameron Brate. Chris Godwin just continues to be touchdown dependent. You know, gets a lot of looks. They call a lot of plays for him in scoring position. And last week he did catch the 2-point conversion that tied it up. But, you know, when he doesn't score a touchdown, he's not going to help you. He has one game over 60 yards this season. That takes care of that one.
All right. How about the Chiefs and the Browns? We've got Freddie Kitchen calling plays for the Browns, Evan.
Yeah. Freddie Kitchens came up under Bruce Arians, coached with him at Alabama. No, played under him. Bruce Arians was the OC at Alabama in the late 1990s. And Freddie Kitchens, who you would never know it today, but he played quarterback at Alabama. And Freddie Kitchens coached tight ends under Bruce Arians. I think that Todd Haley actually brought Freddie Kitchens to Cleveland because they were together in Pittsburgh. No, they were together in Arizona. I don't know. At the end of the day, I'm not sure that Freddie Kitchens is going to have, you know, be able to make a whole lot of changes. Like, you know, people thinking like, oh, you know, will they finally get the ball to Duke Johnson? We're going to have to wait and see because, you know, it's that has not changed. You know, that was a problem under Hugh Jackson too. I mean, Duke Johnson averaged under 10 touches per game under Hugh Jackson the last 2 years. This year, though, it's just gotten even worse where hasn't gotten over 6 touches in any game, even though he's been out there like for 50% of the snaps. It's crazy. And it also could be due to the, you know, partly due to the aggressiveness of Baker Mayfield, who's, you know, one of his great characteristics is keeping his eyes down the football field and not necessarily checking the ball down. With Nick Chubb, he's in a great matchup. I mean, the Chiefs are bad against the run. You know, we saw Philip Lindsay rip them up. Devontae Booker even looked good on the ground against Kansas City last week. The thing that you always worry about is, you know, if the Browns fall behind, Nick Chubb is going to be in a bad position. But being at home, being that the Chiefs, they might not have Tyreek Hill, that, you know, things like that can help Nick Chubb. And he finally did see some targets last week. He saw 3 targets, caught 2, only 10 yards, but, you know, that was equaling what he had on the season previously. So did like to see that. I think that Baker Mayfield is in play as a streamer. Kansas City has major home road splits, has allowed 33 points per game on the road and 18.5 points per game at home. And these road splits go back years, man. I mean, Arrowhead is truly one of the biggest home field advantages. And Baker Mayfield, I think, could capitalize on that. A couple weeks ago, he did have a top 8 fantasy week. He's had a couple of games where he scored over 18 fantasy points. So, you know, with a bunch of teams on bye, I do think that Baker Mayfield is playable as a streamer. I think that David Njoku bounces back. I mean, it's always very, very frustrating when someone has, you know, not only 0 catches, but 0 targets in the game. But Kansas City has been getting gashed by tight ends. You know, there was nothing out of the ordinary with regard to David Njoku last week in terms of like his number of routes run or his snaps. I mean, he played 82% of the snaps. He ran as many routes as he has been running. You know, it just kind of happens, you know, and it is a dysfunctional offense, and that's why coaches get fired. But I think that he will be back and bounce back big against Kansas City. The Chiefs have been much better against slot receivers lately, which is worth noting. Emmanuel Sanders actually has been shut down twice now by them. And got shut down last week by them. Kendall Fuller is playing at a high level at slot corner. That's what the Chiefs expected out of him when they got him in the Alex Smith trade, and he has been delivering. That is notable for Jarvis Landry. Not that you're going to sit him. I mean, the dude gets, you know, a ton of targets. But, if he does have a slow game, like, we will know the reason, or we will know at least one of the contributing factors to that. Antonio Callaway finally had a decent game last week, caught a goal line touchdown, did not have a drop in the game, caught 5 of 6 targets for 36 yards and a TD. I think he can make a big play against Kansas City. The Chiefs have given up the most 20-plus yard receptions in the NFL. You know the deal with Antonio Callaway. Dude did not play football in 2017. It's been a rough go, a very inefficient go, but he has that big playability in him. And, you know, he's running a ton of routes, and Baker Mayfield has not stopped throwing him the ball. If Rashard Higgins comes back, and I think that he probably is due back this week from his MCL injury, that takes Damian Ratley off the board. On the other side, Tyreek Hill, just don't know about him right now. Left last week's game with a groin injury. If he doesn't play, you know, if you're a Sammy Watkins owner, you kind of hope that Tyreek Hill does play, actually, because then he'll probably attract Denzel Ward, who's been excellent for the Browns as a rookie cornerback. You know, these Ohio State cornerbacks, these Ohio State defensive backs in general tend to be hits. It was Marshawn Lattimore, now it's Denzel Ward. And, you know, so I think that if you, you know, as someone who owns Sammy Watkins, I am hoping that Tyreek Hill plays in the game. But either way, it really sets up as a smash game for Travis Kelce. And the Browns continue to miss Joe Schobert, who plays every snap in their defense at middle linebacker. And they have not been as good against tight ends recently as they were earlier in the season. And then at running back, you know, Kareem Hunt did not have a great rushing game last week, but he did have a great touchdown in the passing game. And, you know, thankfully he has been playing in the passing game consistently with pretty good target volume lately. That, you know, is such a big boon to your fantasy stock. And he did not get that in the first three games, but he has gotten that in the last five. And so that has been great for his fantasy value. And then Patrick Mahomes, you know the deal. I mean, I think if Tyreek Hill plays, you legit do, you know, lower your expectations a little bit against Cleveland. Cleveland's strength on defense has been versus the pass. And Tyreek Hill is a true, true difference maker. But, you know, we're starting Patrick Mahomes. He's the friggin' number one quarterback in all of fantasy. We can move on to the next one.
Let's do it. Jets, Dolphins.
Yeah, I think that the what stands out to me here from a daily fantasy standpoint is that Kenyon Drake is in a really good spot here against the Jets. You know, the Jets blitz at one of the highest levels in the NFL. That can leave them vulnerable to screen passes. We saw that last week. Tarik Cohen, you know, on what was it, like the first drive, ripped a 70-yard touchdown on a screen pass. And I think that Kenyon Drake can be utilized in a similar fashion. He has been running more routes than usual lately due to the all of the Dolphins' injuries at wide receiver, and they're not getting really anything from their tight ends. So Kenyon Drake has taken on a pretty big passing game role. Frank Gore, you know, as the grinder, the Jets have not been good in run defense recently. You know, we never have high upside expectations for Frank Gore because he just doesn't, you know, he doesn't have big games anymore. But he is kind of in play as a flex option against the Jets as home favorites in a good matchup. In the receiver core, you know, if Kenny still, first of all, Devontae Parker just came out of nowhere to have the game of his life last week against the Texans. I think it puts him in play very much so against the Jets. Jets have given up the most catches and third most yards to opposing wide receivers, have given up 10 touchdowns to the position in eight games. So that's notable for Devontae Parker. I think that Devontae Parker, you know, he played 66 of 66 snaps last week. I don't think that he's going to lose that role. I think that if anybody loses their role, it'll be Jakeem Grant with Kenny Stills returning. At slot receiver, Daniel Amendola has still been Brock Osweiler's favorite target, and the Jets just get cooked at slot receiver every single week. Last week it was I'm blanking here. Who did the Jets play? Oh, Anthony Miller. Yes, thank you. Anthony Miller got in the paint last week against the Jets, and Danny Amendola runs 82% of his routes in the slot. On the Jets side, man, this offense is not in a good place because they're just – they have been ravaged by
nobody could get
injury.
Open last week, Evan. It was – I was watching that game. None of the Jets – I felt bad for Darnold. Nobody gets open.
It's really bad. I mean, Jermaine Kearse had 10 targets and like 33 yards. You know, they're playing with scrap heap receivers. You know, I don't know if Robbie Anderson is going to be back this week. I don't know if he'd be – even if he comes back, will he be effective trying to play on a high ankle sprain, being a deep threat? I don't know. You know, will Quincy Enunwa come back this week? I don't know. You know, it's just – oof. It's really, really rough. Chris Herndon has – he only had one catch last week, but he has scored a touchdown in three straight games. He's not a terrible option against Miami. Miami has been consistently vulnerable. You play a lot of zone. They've been consistently vulnerable to opposing tight ends. Elijah McGuire is tentatively expected to come off of the injured reserve list after his foot injury. Should be all systems go and jump right into that role that Trenton Cannon had taken on briefly in place of Bilal Powell, but Trenton Cannon actually played more snaps than Isaiah Crowell. Isaiah Crowell had 14 touches. Trenton Cannon had 9. But, you know, that was just a bad offensive performance last week. You know, I think that Elijah McGuire can get to a point where he's getting double-digit touches on a weekly basis. Remember, the Jets running back coach actually in the offseason compared him to LaDainian Tomlinson, which, of course, is crazy. But still, you know, an indication that they really do like him. And I think that he should be owned in pretty much all leagues except for, like, 10-man non-PPR leagues. But, yeah, I mean, that takes care of that. I do like the Dolphins this week as a streamer against this just injury-crippled Jets offense. Next one.
The Lions and the Vikings. Let's start with the Lions, Evan. I've been waiting for this one as they just traded yesterday Golden Tate to the Eagles for a third-round pick. What's the fallout in your mind?
Yeah, so Golden Tate leaves behind 9.9 targets per game and 22% of the Lions' air yards. That's a lot of opportunity. And I don't think that they're going to, you know, just shove all that volume onto TJ Jones or Brandon Powell's plate. And by the way, those are the two candidates to play slot receiver for the Lions. Although I think that when Theo Riddick comes back, he may end up being the guy that they go to most in the slot. But, I mean, that's a lot of opportunity left behind. And I know Kenny Golladay has had it slow recently. It's been slow for him. You know, you look at the box scores and his targets are way down. He's also lost a lot of targets just to, like, pass interference flags and, you know, plays that got overturned. So keep that in mind. He actually ran his 46 pass routes last week, his second most of the season. I really think he's going to be fine. And this Vikings secondary right now is just not imposing. Missing Andrew Sendejo, their free safety. And Xavier Rhodes, he has a high ankle sprain. So, you know, I don't think he's going to play this week. And even if he does, you know, is he going to be a worrisome cornerback, you know, shutting people down? I don't know about that. So Marvin Jones, we know because he is coming off the monster game. But Kenny Golladay, it's not as clear. But I would have a lot of confidence in him going forward with all the opportunity opening up. It's possible that they also use more two tight end sets. Michael Roberts had a big game the other week, but he has just not been running a lot of routes. I mean, he has not ran more than 13 routes in any game so far this season. At the end of the day, I think that the reason that they were willing to make that trade, and it's not like they're tanking. I mean, they just, you know, the week before traded for Snacks Harrison. I think that they thought that he's just not that valuable to their offense. I think that they want to be a run the ball, throw the ball vertically offense. We know that they want to run the ball. That's why they traded up for Frank Ragnow. That's why they traded up for the running back Kerryon Johnson. You know, but I think that that makes sense in combination with being a team that throws the ball vertically, and you could do that with Marvin Jones and with Kenny Golladay. So, and again, it's also possible that they see Theo Riddick as their slot receiver of the future. Like, he can just do what Golden Tate did. In the running game, Kerryon Johnson showed some like matchup proof signs last week. Even though they kind of got blown out by Seattle, and they played from behind for a large majority of the game. Kerryon Johnson still finished with 14 touches. He caught 6 balls, and you know he didn't kill you, and that was good to see in a game like that. And he also could benefit to some extent from Golden Tate's departure, again, freeing up almost 10 targets per game. Matthew Stafford has not been an upside fantasy quarterback so far this year. But I do think that this game has sneaky shootout potential. It'll be played indoors. He's a fringe, low-end, lower upside quarterback one. On the other side, Kirk Cousins has shown upside, and he'll be facing off with a Lions team that, you know, is sneaky good at rushing the passer, or at least has games where they're very good at rushing the passer. They'll pop up for games, and I think they can exploit this Vikings offensive line. You know, Pro Football Focus had the Vikings offensive line allowing pressure on 49% of Kirk Cousins' dropbacks against the Saints. And that's a Saints defense that has struggled to get pressure this season. Hopefully the Vikings can get their left guard, Tom Compton, back, and hopefully they can get their left tackle, Riley Reiff, back. But even despite that, Kirk Cousins was still able to produce in the box score. And I think that he's a pretty confident quarterback one play this week. No Dalvin Cook, so that means Latavius Murray. The Lions were a lot better in run defense last week than they have been in terms of rushing efficiency allowed in Snacks Harrison's first game, and he played 63% of the snaps, which was actually more than he was playing with the Giants. When he was off the field, the Lions averaged, or their opponent averaged, over 6 yards per carry, and then when Snacks Harrison was in there, they gave up 3.2 yards per carry. So he was an immediate difference maker for in the Lions' defensive front. Still, Latavius Murray is at home, favored, getting 18 to 25 touches per game when Dalvin Cook is out, and that makes him a strong RB2 play. Even last week, he had faced a tough matchup against the Saints. Still got the touches, still got in the end zone, you know, got you almost 100 total yards. I think he could do something similar against Detroit. You know, we know the deal with Adam Thielen. I mean, he's unbelievable, 8 straight 100-plus yard games. Last week, you know, he had only 7 targets, and he still went for over 100 yards. And because he runs so many routes in the slot, he does 62% in the slot. He's going to avoid Darius Slay, who plays 93% of his snaps in the slot. By the way, Darius Slay has not been a shutdown cornerback, at least for the last 3 games. So that kind of bodes well for Stephon Diggs. And Stephon Diggs ripped it wide open last week, his best game of the season. He's got double-digit targets in all but 1 game this year, and I think that, you know, even though he's probably going to get a good amount of Slay again, Slay has been struggling, and Stephon Diggs still goes in the slot 25% of the time and gets over 30% of his catches there. Kyle Rudolph has been pretty underwhelming and disappointing, you know, not scoring touchdowns, not getting air yards, not getting any big play chances. He's really just a touchdown or bust guy facing off with Detroit. We can move on to the next one.
Next one is the last one. It's the Falcons and the Redskins. I will mention, however, that as always, you can always take Evan's terrific information and use it to place your bets over at betonline.ag. So they've got prop bets up there. I know a lot of you also listen to the Even Money podcast, and you get the bets from Steve Fezzik and myself. No matter how it is that you want to use the information that we give out to you guys, it's very important that you do it at betonline.ag because you get a 50% welcome bonus when you go ahead and use the code podcast1. And evidently, I won the Podcast One Sportsnet Challenge last week, which means I get to give $100 out to five of you. But you have to have an account at betonline.ag and use the code podcast1 because I can only give out the $100 to five people that are registered. So register now, betonline.ag, using the code podcast1 ASAP before I give out these five hundos. Last game, Evan, Falcons-Redskins.
Yeah, we know exactly what the Redskins have become. And that is a team that wants to run the ball and stop the run. They're playing very old-fashioned, and it is working for them. It'll be, you know, I don't think that that's a long-term formula for success. And I don't even necessarily know if it's a formula that can win in the playoffs, but they are, you know, it's working for them on a game-by-game basis, and Adrian Peterson is playing his butt off. And really it's just, you know, putting to use the strengths of their team. And the strengths of their team is their offensive line and the way that Adrian Peterson is playing and, you know, a defensive front that has a lot of talent on it. I mean, they've used a back-to-back first-round picks on their defensive line, both on dudes out of Alabama who both look like hits, Deron Payne and Jonathan Allen. You know, they got Ryan Kerrigan and Preston Smith, and Zach Brown is playing at the best level of his career. So they're doing what's best for their team relative to their personnel. And, you know, at the very least, that's admirable. Adrian Peterson is going to get a ton of touches. You know, we even saw him catch a receiving TD last week, made a dude miss to get their 7-yard score. Like to see that. Atlanta tends to give up a ton of catches to opposing running backs. This has been, you know, a 4-year trend since Dan Quinn took over at head coach. Chris Thompson only got 5 touches last week, and he injured a rib, so I don't even know if he's going to be available. I mean, the dude has been hurt since Florida State. You know, he's a really fun dude to watch when he is healthy, but he has not been healthy for the majority of his career, and now I don't even know if he's going to play in Week 9. The receivers are literally not even worth talking about. I mean, it's a low-volume passing offense. You know, even against the Falcons, like maybe a guy will be decent, but I just don't know who it's going to be. At tight end, everything that Jordan Reed catches is a dump off, and that's really frustrating. But hey, you know, he got 12 targets last week. He had 9 targets a couple of weeks ago, and the Falcons have lost, you know, their starting middle linebacker, both of their starting safeties. I'd really like to see Alex Smith at least once just hit him on a seam ball, you know, just something, get him moving and get him out in space. Everything is just like a flat route check down. And, you know, that's kind of frustrating, but I don't know. Maybe it'll happen. At the end of the day, we want the targets, and Jordan Reed has been getting the targets and the catches. On the other side, the Falcons come off their bye. You know, the Falcons last year came off their bye and got just trounced by the Dolphins. The Dolphins were one of the worst teams in the NFL last year. And I think he was even at a game that was in Atlanta. That kind of like resonates with me because it's like, it's a reminder of the volatility of the teams coming off of their bye. And now they're coming off their bye to go face Washington. Just something to think about. The Redskins used to be a team that could not stop the run but was good against the pass. Now they're a team that does stop the run and is not as good against the pass. Quentin Dunbar, their number two cornerback, has arguably outplayed Josh Norman this season. He was out last week with like nerve damage in his leg. And I think that his injury will be something to monitor. I think that we're going to see Josh Norman chase Julio Jones in this game. And Josh Norman usually does not chase receivers, but he did chase Odell Beckham a good amount last week with Quentin Dunbar out. That doesn't mean that we shy away from Julio Jones, but I think that it is notable for his matchup. Mohamed Sanu, Calvin Ridley should be healthier coming off the bye. They both were banged up entering that Monday night game against the Giants, but they should be all systems go. Mohamed Sanu, more of like a wide receiver four, touchdown dependent wide receiver four, and Calvin Ridley, sort of like a touchdown dependent guy as well. Has slowed down since having six touchdowns in like three games. The touchdown regression has hit him pretty hard. The Austin Hooper is a solid play against the Washington. They play a lot of zone. They're kind of playing musical chairs at safety now. They traded for Ha Clinton Dix, who's been very good for Green Bay, but. They're shaking up their secondary, and that's something that potentially opponents could exploit until they get all settled in. And then in the running game, it's going to be a two-way deal between Tevin Coleman and Ito Smith, and that makes both guys flex options. I think that Tevin Coleman is the superior flex play, Ito Smith a pretty weak one, and that takes care of that.
That'll do it for part one here of the Fantasy Feast Eaten podcast. But you guys know the deal. It's the only show that's so nice we do it twice here on the Ross Tucker Media podcast, whatever you want to call it, network. We will get to the Sunday late games. And, man, there are some good ones as well as the Sunday nighter and the Monday nighter. Two of the best games of the year, quite frankly. And a lot to talk about from a fantasy perspective on episode number two, which we will record momentarily and then post on your podcast app as well as rostucker.com shortly after midnight Eastern. He's Evan Silva, at Evan Silva on Twitter. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL, Twitter and Instagram. Reminder, take the time, rate and review all five shows so you can get the free Madden this week. It's that easy. I'm stuffed, though, just for a little bit. Take a two-minute break, and then we'll record part two right now. Make sure you listen to both.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.